The Africa Roundtable, a podcast by the Global Perspectives Initiative.
My name is Lawrence Ivel, and on behalf of the Global Perspectives Initiative, thank you for joining this Africa Roundtable podcast. Today, we're talking to Dr. Borna Nyoke Anoke, physician and leader in the field of neglected tropical diseases. Neglected tropical diseases affect more than 1 billion people globally. This grouping of 20 different conditions, some more known, such as dengue or rabies, and some much less known, disproportionately affect the lives of women and children in developing countries across the global south. For those who contract these diseases, the consequences of this neglect can be devastating on a health, social, and economic level. The importance of understanding these diseases and a potential roadmap forward is our topic for today. Dr. Borna Nyoke Anoke is a Kenyan physician and a senior project manager for clinical trials related to NTDs at the Drugs for Neglected Diseases Initiative. She works on COVID-19 and antibiotic research and was named in Business Daily's Africa Top 40 Under 40 Women list. She's a renowned public health expert and founder of the HEMA Foundation, a Nairobi-based NGO working on physical and mental health for marginalized groups and environmental health.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Let's begin by providing a bit of background for our listeners. When we talk about neglected tropical diseases, what do we mean by neglected exactly? And what makes NTDs such an important topic?
When you talk about neglected within the scientific or medical space, we tend to talk about diseases that are not at the forefront. As you rightly mentioned, we tend to concentrate quite a bit on the shiny diseases that are there, such as HIV, COVID, currently things like Ebola. So you find quite a lot of funding, quite a lot of international press attention is on them. So when you talk about neglected, these are the diseases we barely talk about. We do not see them as often as the other diseases within our clinical practice, or we do not have the same kind of attention, in short. But then at DNDi, we add, apart from it being a neglected disease, we add the population to it. Because, of course, if you have a group of people that we are not concentrating on, that we have put aside, whatever diseases they might have would also be neglected with them. And what we have seen with neglected tropical diseases, it tends to affect the poor, of the very poor, the most impoverished populations, populations that even our ministries of health or even our governmental facilities or our non-governmental organizations do not already pay attention to.
Neglected tropical diseases disproportionately affect women and children. For our listeners, can you provide an example of the ground level impact of this form of neglect?
Yes, one of them would be mycetoma. That is one of the neglected tropical diseases I'm quite passionate about. This can be either a bacterial or a fungal infection that usually just starts with a small either thorn prick or a small incision on your body, which now develops into a larger wound. So for the bacterial form, this can easily be treated with our normal antibiotics. And we usually have treatment or cure rates, which are quite high, above 80%, 90%. Now, the fungal form of the mycetoma, this affects what we call the mycetoma belt. This is an area around the equator from Sudan, India, Brazil, that is usually affected by this mostly. So you'll find quite a number of countries, or even here in Kenya, if you talk to our physicians, they're not very well aware of mycetoma. If you start going into the rural areas such as Wad Onsa, which is almost 6 hours away of Khartoum, you find villages where you find most of the population are amputated. And these are people who have had to make makeshift ways to be able to actually move around. And you'll see the men walking around and they have amputated legs, and you'll find them with the walkers, or you'll find them with the boots, but you won't see the women and the children around. And because of the stigma that is associated with it, we've already mentioned that this is already affecting the poor of the poor. These are people who are reliant on subsistence farming. These are people who are reliant on working with their hands or working in the fields. So by the time you're amputating their leg or amputating their hand, you've already reduced their social value within this particular place. For the women, apart from reducing their social value, both as providing an economic input, you've also reduced the aesthetic contribution, if I might say, within the society. So these women tend to be hidden. You'll find that in places, the woman has not left her hut or her house in 5 to 10 years. So she becomes stigmatized, she becomes ostracized because they are deemed as not providing a huge value to the society. So this woman, of course, does not get married because she's not able to find a husband. She's not able to have children. At the same time, she's being taken care of by her family, which is another economic burden to them. Then you also find that after her parents maybe pass away, she does not have anyone else to be able to take care of them. For the children, we've also seen quite the same happening because treatment for mycetoma, especially the fungal type, involves you taking medication, 2 tablets twice a day, every single day for a period of 1 year. And you still have less of a 50% chance of actually getting cured. So if you find some parents who are taking their children to school and they have to pay for uniforms or tuition or just the transport for the child to go to school, if you add this extra financial burden of having to pay for pills, then they remove the school for them. So for them, they have to stay at home and they will find other things for the child to do. So if they're not going to school, they're also stigmatized within the society. This also reduces the quality of life for these children, and they're not able to actually move on in life as their peers would.
You sound understandably very passionate about this topic, and you're incredibly knowledgeable. But as you also mentioned, a lot of local physicians are quite unfamiliar with these diseases. From your experience, what's preventing local doctors from learning about or understanding these diseases?
The first thing is the poverty and most of where these patients are located. Because in sub-Saharan Africa, unfortunately, most of the physicians are located within the urban areas, and we have very few physicians in the rural areas. This is, first of all, occasioned to the fact that we have a very poor doctor-to-patient ratio, almost 1 to 1,000 in some areas in sub-Saharan Africa. And also, apart from that, is the fact that most of these very rural areas where we find most of our poor of the poor, they do not have access to healthcare services. So, and as I mentioned, with lack of education also in these areas, a lot of ignorance does not allow them to seek for healthcare facilities because, first of all, they are not available. And second of all, they do not term it as a healthcare problem. They would go to their traditional healers. They would think of it as a form of curse that has actually been put onto the particular village or to a particular family. So their first instinct is not to seek a doctor. So they will not travel all the way to Khartoum. They will not travel all the way to Nairobi to be able to seek that. So the physicians there will not, first of all, have access to these patients. So it needs to be concerted effort for all of these neglected tropical diseases from the Ministry of Health, from our healthcare practitioners, and also from our people, just to have a bit more clearer understanding of these diseases. So that in the same way, like malaria has been talked about for so long, that anybody, even within the village, within the rural area, starts having chills, starts having fevers, they will start thinking of malaria and they will think that I have to go to this hospital and seek treatment. That is the same way I think neglected tropical diseases need to be talked about so that we're able to understand. And the same way we have guidelines for treatment of malaria, guidelines for treatment of HIV, guidelines for treatment of typhoid, we should also have those guidelines for the treatment of neglected tropical diseases to allow the physicians to have this at mind whenever they see these lesions present to them and they have the right arsenal of treatment to be able to assist the patients.
And when it comes to the international community, in recent times, we've seen an awareness of the Ebola outbreak and then, of course, COVID-19. Speaking to this, do you think that COVID-19 was helpful for highlighting health challenges in the global south? Have you seen more funds, attention? Or has it achieved the opposite?
Of course, it highlighted something that we all knew, but we were not paying attention. And this was on the healthcare services, especially in the developing world, because we all knew that the healthcare system was not meeting, if I may say, the standards, or did not have the requisite for dealing with the healthcare issues that we are having. But with COVID, we were able to see places like India, even in the global north, the fact that they were overwhelmed with the cases from COVID, that was part of the fears that we were having in the global south. Because if you're looking at Italy, if you're looking at the USA, and you're seeing patients seated outside because there are not enough healthcare facilities to absorb them, then you come down here and you think most of our referral centers have less than 10 ICU beds. If we were to look at the critical care nurses, if we were to look at the ICU doctors, we barely had the resources. So if these numbers were to hit us, as it was hitting most of the other countries, what would happen to us? And this actually brought quite a bit of activity by our ministries of health and quite a number of institutions, just to be able to ramp up some of the activities, such as setting up the intensive care units, having training done to ensure that we have the critical care, healthcare professionals, and that we just had the facilities available to be able to work on that. And also quite a lot of training. So this became an advantage, because we are able to use some of these facilities, the infrastructural and also the training of the new people, to be able to put them in other diseases. Because what we have seen, especially here in Kenya, we had quite a number of nurses and community health workers trained. We had quite a number of new wings that had been built to be able to absorb the COVID. Then the wave went down. We had less than 3% positivity rates in Kenya for quite a number of months. So, of course, these facilities had to be used. Then we saw this being transferred to other diseases that did not have this kind of space before. Now, the disadvantage of it is we know NTD has had quite low funding for very many years. And because, as I mentioned, neglected tropical diseases are not very flashy. But with COVID, we saw that the funding is available, but the funding is only available to what people deem as important to them, to what affects them directly. So it also showed us that we would need to be able to position neglected tropical diseases in a certain way to make it known that even as we think of it not affecting us directly, if we're talking about the disability adjusted life years lost for these people, they have a huger impact on the economy as a whole. So those are some of the discussions that have come in.
And you know, the listeners of this particular podcast will be quite interested in the relationship that Europe has with this topic. How would you describe the relationship between African and European nations when it comes to pharmaceutical research, specifically about NTDs? And is there room for improvement here?
There's quite a bit of work that is already being done in conjunction with a lot of European countries and also with a lot of European governments. We have been quite fortunate with DNDi to be working with donors such as the BMBF from Germany. We are also working with UK Aid, and our headquarters are in Geneva. So the Canton de Genève has been very influential in a lot of the work that we're doing in neglected tropical disease. So we have quite a lot of European association with most of the work that we're doing, apart from the donor funding that is being provided, just also in terms of ensuring some of our activities that are being done on the ground are being supported.
So you're talking quite a bit about the positive collaborations there. I think that's really important to highlight. However, one thing that has come out of the COVID-19 outbreak is this inequality when it comes to intellectual property rights, manufacturing, and the sharing of information and material. Perhaps you could speak a little bit more about your collaboration with manufacturers. How does that work with NTDs?
How DNDi works, let me talk about it specifically with how we work. We work in terms of partnerships, in terms of we talk of ourselves as more of a, if I may say, virtual organization, in terms of we do not conduct the clinical trials by ourselves. We do not produce the molecules by ourselves. We do not provide the funding by ourselves. So what we do is, as I mentioned, all these organizations, we are able to go to them and we are able to present this case and get the funding to be able to conduct these trials. Then we go now to our partners, who can be pharmaceutical partners, who can be the manufacturing partners, who are able to provide this. And then we work with our clinical trial sites, which are mostly located in our LMICs, where they conduct the clinical trials. So by the time we go into this partnership, everyone is aware of their contribution to this particular disease, so that we are able to actually work on the clinical trial. We are able to have this particular product that has been produced to work as a treatment for a disease, and we're able to register it. By the time we go into the registration, the pharmaceutical company or the manufacturing plant knows we were working on this particular clinical trial to be able to provide this particular treatment to the people that it is affecting. So it would not apply to many of the other research work or diseases that have been working, where we have quite a bit of pushback or pull in terms of registration and who exactly owns the copyrights to this particular drug and all that. By the time we actually conduct our clinical trials, we are very well aware that this treatment is going to be provided to these particular patients at a particular price. And we know that even if the rights of the drug belong to a particular company or to a particular manufacturer, that they will be able to provide these drugs to these countries for a specific period of time.
And elaborating on that a little bit further, you have many years of experience in research, involvement in HIV, COVID, and antibiotic research. Let's talk a little bit about affordability here. What do you think are the biggest challenges in researching affordable remedies? And is there a more appropriate way to deliver affordable medicine?
So the model that I just explained is what we're trying to use to be able to actually ensure that these medicines that we are working on or developing are affordable. Because as you're aware, drug development takes quite a bit of time before preclinical, clinical, working through the registration process. These are activities that can take between 5 to even 15 years. For most pharmaceutical companies. So for these pharmaceutical companies, as you've seen with COVID, you will need quite a number of resources to be able to make this work. You will need quite a number of resources, meaning personnel working on the molecule itself and everything. This makes the product very expensive. Then it makes it unaffordable to the people who actually needed them, because we've talked about this affecting entities, affecting the poor of the poor. So with DNDI's work is we are reducing each bit of work that they have to do. You have this molecule as a pharmaceutical company. We will do the clinical trial for you. We will work through the registration process for you, of course, in collaboration with you and the other teams. This greatly affects the price at the end when we are able to register the drug, making sure that by the time we have a drug that is out there, the people that we were working on to actually produce the drug are able to afford it in the end. So that's why we work with the pharmaceutical companies as partners. That's why we work with the ministries of health to ensure that even by the time we have that drug registered, we are able to actually pull it back and have it adopted in their guidelines for treatment of this particular disease. We work a lot with the World Health Organization to ensure that these medicines are within their essential medicines list. And also we work a lot with policy and advocacy teams to be able to push for these drugs to be able to be seen as the right treatment that should be used in most of these places. So this allows for affordability and also, and most importantly, access of these drugs to those who need it the most.
And focusing specifically on funding here, and referring once again to the COVID-19 pandemic, have you as an organization witnessed any form of disease fatigue when it comes to funding?
We actually talk about donor fatigue quite a lot, and it tends to happen because when you keep on talking about the same diseases all the time, and as I mentioned, for drug development or even vaccine development, some of these things take quite a long time. So if we come to you at this time and tell you about the plight of visceral leishmaniasis or the plight of lymphatic filariasis, and 10 years later, we come back to you, with the same plight, then donors tend to want to feel that their money is being used properly. So just the fact that it took 10 to 15 years doesn't mean it wasn't used properly, but most people tend to want like a return to their investments, even though it's not financial, a bit faster. And what we were able to see with COVID, this allowed for it to happen because within a year, you could have vaccines come out. So it makes the donors easier for them to actually spend their money on particular initiatives because they are seeing the output coming out as fast as possible. So neglected tropical diseases and other diseases, it takes much longer. So donor fatigue is something that we see quite common. And also within 2020, 2021, we saw a lot of our donors and most of the fundraising team were able to relate to this was a lot of the funds were now being diverted to what the donors felt was going to provide an output quite fast. Because for them, they're thinking this is COVID, it's affecting us directly. And you're telling us you'll give us a vaccine within 1 year. While DNDi and other organizations are coming to you and telling you, we want the similar amount of money, but we are going to show you results within the next 7 to 10 years. And it's a disease that is not affecting you and it is not affecting us directly, but there are some people somewhere that it is affecting them. So it's quite a lot from both ends.
Although these particular diseases may not be affecting a number of countries in the global north, we have seen that Germany has recently signed the Kigali Declaration in January, signalling an ambition or certainly more intention towards NTDs. Perhaps you could speak a little bit about the importance of the Kigali Declaration, what it means for the field, and also if you could offer one piece of advice for German and European policymakers, what would it be?
For us, the fact that we are first of all, talking about neglected tropical diseases is a huge win for us. And the fact that the heads of state will be launching and talking about the Kigali Declaration on NTDs, we are seeing it as a very high-level spotlight to NTDs because the declaration will be able to mobilize political and also social commitment, which is part of the sustainable development goals that we have on NTDs. And my take on this or my advice on this would be, I do hope that we do not lose the momentum that has already been created at this particular time, because it's easier for NGOs, it's easier for all these policy and advocacy teams to be talking about the work that we need to do on NTDs, but without the political commitment that is required from most of these governments, then we are not able to achieve a lot.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for your time today. I think that's all we've got time for, Dr. Borner. It's been fascinating to listen to you. And on behalf of everyone at GPI, thank you.
Thank you very much, Lawrence.
Joining us today was Dr. Borner Nyoke Enoke, physician and senior project manager at the Drugs for Neglected Diseases Initiative.
The Africa Roundtable, a podcast by the Global Perspectives Initiative.
More topics and discussions are available on the GPI website and in the newsletter. And all of this information can be found online at globalperspectives.org. A special thanks today to Corinna Roberts, Hannah Holscher, and Nora Kiefer for producing this podcast.
I've been Lawrence Ivel, and on behalf of the Global Perspectives Initiative, thanks for listening.